Support for today's broadcast comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. The Corkscrew carries a full line of wines, beers, and spirits for everyone from the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or on the web at thecorkscrew.com. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Aladdin, a contemporary take on the Aladdin story. The thought-provoking extravaganza blends words, music, film, video, and live performance. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon, the Dean of the College of Science for Women at the University of Baghdad, Dr. Anis Al-Rawi, is visiting Champaign-Urbana to talk about the consequences of war in Iraq, Iraqi women, and science and religion. He is here as part of a speaking tour that is taking him across the U.S. In a moment, I'll tell you where he will speak this week in Champaign-Urbana. But first, I'd like to tell you more about our guest, Dr. Al-Rawi. He is a professor of nuclear biochemistry at the University of Baghdad and the head of the Department of Chemistry of the Women's College of Education at the university. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions and comments. I look forward to hearing from you. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. WILL. Our guest will speak at 4 o'clock this afternoon at the University of Illinois YMCA on South Wright Street, and on Friday evening at 7:45 p.m. he will speak at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. He will speak at the Islamic Center about modern science and religion, and the topic for his address this afternoon, the consequences of war on Iraq. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Dr. Al-Rawi, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me to talk.
I thought we would talk a little bit about life at Baghdad University. It's the oldest university in modern Iraq, and it had vied with Cairo University as the most prominent in the Arab world. Would you tell us something about the history of Baghdad University and life there today?
Well, Baghdad University, as you said, it is probably it's the first university in the modern history, because there is another university in the past. We call it Al-Mustansiriya, which is around 1,000 years. I mean, Al-Mustansiriya was so famous, and still it is existing, you know. But for the modern history, University of Baghdad, and it is a very, very huge university. The number of students in this university is around 86,000 students. And if you collect the student with the staff, with there are over 125,000 attendant. Baghdad University has around 32 colleges and higher institutes for science. And if you look at the Baghdad University, you might see that each college might be a university by its own. Like my college, the College of Science for Women, at the time being, we have around 10,000 students, female. you know, it is a very, very large. You might, you don't, you might find some universities all over the world less than that. You know, the number less than one college, and the Baghdad University lies on Tigris River. It has very nice scenery, beautiful, and the science in our university is still up to the standard as it was before. Really, I mean, even during the war, all the staff and the students used to attend their lectures. They didn't stop. Only they stopped having lectures and you know, attending lectures only at the time when there is a curfew. Otherwise, I mean, our colleges are running smoothly until this moment.
Mm. The war, the occupation, the conflict, how has it affected the students? I mean, are students, they're still coming to class?
And, yes. The,
you know, going back to the period of sanctions, I would imagine that that would have been difficult for the university.
Well, I mean, as I said, students still attending their classes. War didn't affect us very much. But the thing that we're affected is, I mean, having probably the looting all the scientific equipments, looting all the books, burning the libraries. This has affected us very much, very well. Otherwise, I mean, now we are trying to provide the student with these looted things, you know, from the neighboring friends, from the Western universities who are helping us a lot. Like if you see now, for instance, the British Council, you know, is providing our libraries with books and with computers for having, you know, what do you call it, learn overseas. I mean, video learning or what do you call it, far away learning,
distance learning.
We have got that from the British Council, and I'm here in America. I visited Cambridge and Harvard and Boston universities for doing a link and for helping us, you know, to reestablish, to rebuild the infrastructure which were destroyed. I mean, and people here, and I found very friendly in America, doing us a lot, I mean, helping us a lot, and they are opening their arms for us to, you know, to help. And they are asking us, you know, what sort of help that we are in need. I expose what we are in need, and they are, I think they are doing their best. A friend of mine in Kansas State University in Manhattan, she sent us 5,000 books and journals, and we have received it, and now it is in my library, in the library of my college, and we were so thankful for that lady, for the university, and hope. Today I met the vice chancellor of the university, I mean, the provost, I have met him, Mr. Stewart, and he exposed himself to us and said that we are ready to do any help you are in need. And he gave me papers to sign for sort of sending scholars to come here, scholarships. We have in Iraq now around 2,000 scholarships being announced by the government to send a student on our own, and we have specified over $100 million to send postgraduates to fulfill their MSc and PhD in America. For that, I'm, you know, here in Illinois to ask those who are in charge to give them chance to come and having their studies here rather than to go to Germany, like, because we don't know the German language, or to France because it's difficult to talk French. You have to, I mean, a student to spend a lot of time to learn French. And we don't also want them to go only to Britain, because Britain now, it was really a good friend with the Iraqis. We and American, they were so you know, I mean, grateful to us. I mean, they were our friends, I mean, the universities, because most of our graduates, I mean, professors now in Iraq are from America, I mean, graduates from America. And this gentleman who is sitting, you know, near me is Dr. Mohammed. He's also from America, graduate. For that, we'd love to see our student coming here in this country to learn a lot from a civilized world.
Mm. With us in the studio this afternoon is your host here in Champaign-Urbana, Muhammad Al-Hidi. So that's who you refer to this afternoon.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. What is the security situation for students and faculty at the university?
What's the situation?
The security.
Oh, security. Well, actually, inside the campus itself, it is very, very secure. But when you go outside the fences of the university, you can't secure anybody. You can't, you know, I mean, everybody is in charge of himself. He might be secure, he might not.
Yeah.
But when the student or the staff member enter inside the fences of the university, we have to protect them until they get out. For that, security in general in the country is very bad.
Yeah. I have read that a number of academics have been murdered since the U.S. occupation. An article published a year ago said conservative estimates put the number at 13. What can you tell us about these deaths?
In fact, from my college, you know, under my supervision, I have two staff members were killed. I mean, two doctors in physics. And one now is in the jail. I mean, who is behind that, we don't know really.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the situation is so vague. And no one knows what's happening, who is behind, you know, probably superpowers who... They know who is behind, but I mean, no. As we, as human beings, I mean, scientific staff, we don't know because we are not politicians. I think politics behind that, and somebody he knows better than us.
What was life like for academics, speaking of politics, during the Ba'ath Party regime and during the period of de-Ba'athification?
Well, in the Ba'ath Party, the academics, they weren't really in a very good situation because Saddam Hussein, when he started his war with the Iranian in 1980, he stopped every help to the universities. He concerned himself on the army and developing the Ministry of Arms. The Minister of Defense, he spent a lot of money on the atomic energy, and he left behind him, you know, behind his back, all the universities. For the academics, they weren't in a good situation. You know, as myself, as a professor in chemistry, I've got my professorship in 1989. My salary, if you believe it or not, at that time was only $30 per month. And a big family and living in a good place in Baghdad. $30 a month for a professor, it is really a mess. You can't believe it. Now, thank goodness, my salary after after the firing out of Saddam Hussein, now it's equivalent as a dean, not as a staff, is $1,000 a month. But those who are the scientists, I mean, professors who are not in charge of or boss like that, their salary is around $450 per month. We think that at the time being Iraq is so cheap, it is also sufficient. Although we need, I mean, look, to get more salaries for our scientific staff. But, you know, because we are under war and this is probably enough for them. At the time being.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today is the Dean of the College of Science for Women at the University of Baghdad, Dr. Anis Al-Rawi. He's visiting Champaign-Urbana to talk about the consequences of war in Iraq, Iraqi women, and science and religion. He's here as part of a speaking tour that is taking him across the United States, and he's been at Harvard University and some colleges in the Boston area,
and
you're
Cambridge,
Harvard, and from here you go to Kansas State?
Yes.
Yes.
On Manhattan on Sunday morning.
And this is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our guest this afternoon will be speaking at 4 o'clock at the University of Illinois YMCA on South Wright Street. The topic of that address the consequences of war on Iraq. And then on Friday evening at 7:45, he'll speak at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center on South Lincoln Avenue in Urbana about modern science and religion. So again, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have a couple of listeners waiting to talk with us, so if you'll put your headphones on, we'll go and talk with our first caller this afternoon in Indiana on line four. Good afternoon.
Hello. I imagine you'll discuss the question I'm going to ask, but I just want to make sure you did. Here in the United States, and particularly in the West, we basically get a very negative view of the treatment of women in Muslim countries, and I guess in particular in Iraq, especially with the war and the situation is now. I'd wonder if you could talk about that. I know there are some women in the upper echelons who can get about without too much trouble and get to the West and do things and go back to Iraq. But I wonder if you just go through the different social classes in terms of what we in the United States would consider ill treatment to women. Thanks a lot.
Well, Iraq, I mean, as Iraqis, we treat women very well. I mean, this is in everywhere in the world. You might find, I mean, the husbands treating their wives, you know, not injustice. I mean, they are, you know, making abuse of their wives. But in Iraq, I mean, if you take it as a Muslim society, we treat our wives and our girls and our women are very well. I mean, because this is to respect our religion. We don't have to, I mean, to abuse the women. If somebody abuses the women, it means that he is not righteous and he is not... if you look, I mean, at the moment, the distribution of women in Iraq is around 60%, and 40% are males. For that, they have the same opportunity in life. I mean, in getting salaries, in getting jobs. I mean, no. I mean, if you look at the moment, the women in Iraq has got more chances than the men. For that, we don't discriminate between men and women. I mean, this is a fact. For that, I don't know. I mean, if somebody telling you that the woman is not, having a proper treatment, I think it might be not right. I mean, if you look at the moment, if you look at the universities, I mean, for the postgraduate, MSc and PhD, the women has got more chances than the men. Now we have a program of graduating around 10,000 graduates, postgraduates. 6,000 of them are women, and 4,000 are men. For that, in our country, we look the same look at the women. We don't differentiate. For that, I think anybody think that we are discriminating, it is not right.
Well, a couple of interesting things here to follow up, and then we'll get to the next caller. Demographically, it is so important that women continue to be encouraged to play a role in Iraqi society because of the effect on the male population because of all the years of war.
Actually, I mean, if it is, you know, the normal distribution, and it is really, they call it Poisson distribution. It is a normal distribution all over the world. If there were no war, the normal distribution is 55% women and 45% men. Of course, I mean, if there are wars, the percent of the women increases because there were many men were killed in war. I mean, if you take Iraq from 1980 up to this moment, we lost around 3 million of our men in war between Iran and Iraq, and after that with Kuwait, and then the war, which lasted later on. We are losing a lot of our men. For that, the women population is increasing. Even though this is, you know, the increment of the population of the women, they have the same chances as the men. We don't discriminate. For that, if you go to see our country, you find that the women, I mean, at the time being, if you look at the National Assembly, 33% of the National Assembly are women. If you look at the ministries, we have going to nominate 9 women as ministers. I don't think this could happen in anywhere in the world. In America, it didn't happen like that. And in Britain, I mean, women is not as much as in Iraq.
Yeah, there's an article today in the New York Times, the online edition. The headline is "In Jeans or Veils, Iraqi Women Are Split on New Political Power." There is a debate underway in Iraq about the role of women in politics. However, the article points out one thing they all agree on is the need to maintain women's voices in politics.
We have women forces. I mean, we have now. Now, I mean, the women joined the army, joined the intelligence, joined the security. I mean, now many women were practiced to be in the army to defend the country. For that, now sharing, putting the addressing the customer, the address of the army. But I've really yesterday showed them in a film about that. But couldn't show, I mean, the women as an army woman, because they said they don't want to separate it, I mean, in Iraq, because still it is something secret. They don't want to expose the women, because our society won't accept, even at this moment, our society would never accept that a woman enter the army or the intelligence. It is just look like, you know, some sort of shame in an Islamic society. But actually they are entering now.
Let's talk with another listener, caller on line one, a listener in Champaign County. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Greetings. I attended your talk yesterday, and one of the very disturbing statistics, since you were talking about demographics, you gave a figure of 38 as the life expectancy presently. I presume a lot of that is from infant mortality, which has been high for quite a few years because of... I know you haven't also that you haven't spoken English much in 30 years, so I appreciate your efforts, and I'll try not to be speaking too fast. But something on that, I think that's the case. I also remember before you visited that your family, I think, is from Fallujah, and you mentioned yesterday that your 80-year-old mother is living in a tent outside of Fallujah, because I gather your family home has been destroyed. And I'd like for you to talk about that and what you perceive as the attack on Fallujah to have been. And since your specialty is has to do with nuclear biophysics, depleted uranium. So that's three things, and I guess that's plenty for a while, and I'll hang
sure
up
is.
And just listen.
Okay, thank you very much. Right. I was not able to go to your talk yesterday because I was here at work. But those are interesting. I'm glad the listener called in with those comments. And let's start there where he started, perhaps, with some information on life expectancy and infant mortality.
Well, thank you very much for talking with me slowly, because I can catch up with you. I mean, if you were talking a bit fast, it's probably difficult for me. Actually, I mean, when I spoke yesterday about the lifespan, or I mean, the average life in Iraq, now because of the high rate of mortality in Iraq, I mean, as I said, I mean, if you look here in America, the average life for women is around 80 years, and the men is 78. I mean, this is what I asked some people, and said, "What's the average life in America?" And in you know, I mean, they say 78 for the men and 80, around 80 for the women. This is you take it if you take it from zero, from the birth until the death of everyone. I mean, in Iraq now, because of the high rate of mortality, we found that the average life in Iraq is 38 years. I mean, for the whole subject. And if this is almost half of the age in America, it means that we have lost 100% of our population. I mean, statistically, if you give a chance for all those who passed away, as a children, as a youngster, if they have got a chance to get, be alive and get married, then our population now, instead of 25, it has to be 50 million. And because we have lost that much of people, and now we are not enjoying our life, 38 years is too young. I mean, we are too young to pass away. I mean, and even though, if you look at those who are over 38, most of them now are handicapped or suffering from hunger, suffering from, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to go through it because I'm on a radio. Sorry, what is the next point? I mean, I'm from Fallujah. Yes, I'm from a city of Fallujah, which were almost completely destroyed by the war. And most of the people at the time being are living in tents around Fallujah because Fallujah is not a good city to live in anymore. Now people, I mean, starting to remove all the debris, all the wreckage, all, you know, the smart bombs which destroyed, I mean, our areas. They are starting to re-clean the whole areas were completely demolished. And now they are, I mean, as I heard from, you know, when I phoned yesterday to my parents, they said they are start compensating the people who were suffering from the attack. But the only now the problem is how to know your house, because our house is very small and house is over house, and then the complete houses were demolished. For that, anybody now is asking, where is my area? Where is my, because where is my original area? Because our house is now is over 100 years in age. For that, you don't know. I mean, the maps in Fallujah, you cannot find it because we are also destroyed. Now, another problem being raised, how to find your original house after a complete demolition. And the third question, sorry, what is it?
Oh, depleted uranium.
Yeah. Well, depleted uranium, if you attend my lecture today, you might find it is interesting for you how much depleted uranium were bombarded on Iraqi cities, especially in the south, to destroy the tanks, the Iraqi tanks. And, you know, they call some of them, they call it smart bombs. I have got tables about 500 tons of depleted uranium missiles and bombs were dropped on Iraq during this war, and probably even the war before, which was happened, I mean, to exclude the Iraqis from Kuwait.
Well, I was interested. I know that this was one of the things that you were going to talk about in your visit here. So I did a little research, and apparently a depleted uranium shell, when it hits its target, it burns and it disperses a fine dust.
Yeah.
And then that dust can be carried long distances by winds, and it can wind up, of course, in the soil and in the water.
Well, you see, I mean, the danger from the depleted uranium, up to my knowledge, is when you inhale it. Mm. Because, I mean, it is a heavy element. If you take it by stomach, you might get it rid, your body might get rid of it. Might, you know, if you wash the food or the plants, you might not, you know, you might not get it bad. But the thing that when you inhale the dust and go, you know, I mean, the uranium goes inside your chest, because uranium is emitting alpha particles, which is very dangerous. And this is the half-life of uranium is 4.5 times 10 to 9 year, I mean 4.5 billion year. I mean, the uranium is still emitting alpha particles in your body. For that, it is very dangerous when you inhale it, when it goes in the wounds. I mean, you can't get, I mean, because Iraq at the time being is, you know, have got a very nice wind, always continuous wind to the south or to the, you know, for that winds might bear the dust and throw it away out of Iraq. It might go to Kuwait or to Saudi Arabia. But also, I mean, you might get some electromagnetic radiation from bombing, you know, radiated bombs. And this radiation might go around the globe 6 times per single second. For that, it is not only going to affect Iraq as it's going to affect Iraq as, you know, the place for what do you call it, local site. But radiation is affecting the whole world, because gamma radiation, if you give bombard a bomb with gamma radiation, this radiation gyrates around the globe 6 times per second. And it is a global really pollution, rather than it is a local pollution.
Yeah, so it's virtually impossible to clean it up.
Well, you could not, but you see, what can we do? I mean, this is science now, and this is civilization. This is a new techniques, a new advanced knowledge, making the life more worse rather than to make it better.
Yeah. Is there a discussion underway? This is something I don't really know about. Is there discussion in the world community about, you know, should we be using depleted uranium? Should we be using this in weaponry? Is there a discussion in the world?
Of course, really, yeah. There are laws really about that. It's completely prohibited. It's completely prohibited to bombard depleted uranium. It is completely prohibited to bomb with napalm, bombs, napalm. For that, there are rules. You cannot do it. But if you are a superpower, you might do it. I mean, nobody is, going to ask you. Nobody can ask the lion why you are, you are so strong.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Anis Al-Rawi. He is visiting Champaign-Urbana to talk about the consequences of war in Iraq, the status of Iraqi women, and science and religion. He is the dean of the College of Science for Women at the University of Baghdad, and he holds... I lost that particular piece of paper. Here we go. He holds masters and PhD and MS and PhD in radiation chemistry. He's the author of many, many articles and 17 books on scientific issues. He serves as editor-in-chief of a scientific journal based in Baghdad, and he's head of the Iraqi Youth Muslims Committee. He's in the Champaign-Urbana area, as I mentioned, to talk to a number of groups. This afternoon, he'll be speaking at the University of Illinois YMCA on South Wright Street in Champaign about the consequences of war in Iraq. That event is set for 4 o'clock this afternoon. Then Friday evening at 7:45, he will be at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center to talk about modern science and religion. The Mosque and Islamic Center is located on South Lincoln Avenue in Urbana. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions for our guest, Dr. Al-Rawi. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. What other challenges, what other damage has been done to the environment, and how, all the years of conflict and hardship, how has the environment been affected?
Well, really, the environment were severely damaged and affected by all sort of pollutants. I mean, something you might not know, or people might not know, is the magnetic field in Iraq were changed a little bit. You might ask me, how do you know that? I mean, because, we used to have birds coming from India and from Bangladesh comes to spend their winter in Iraq. because of the changing of the magnetic field, they are losing their way to come to Iraq anymore. For that, I mean, changing the habit, the houses of the birds. Birds can come, you know, from that long distance to Iraq through the pine body in their brain. It is a compass telling the birds how to come to Iraq. For that, any change in the magnetic field means that you might kill all the life in Iraq. Because if you know, I mean, this magnetic field were changed or fluctuated, that because we are in this life, I mean, in this globe, I mean, there is inside the globe, there is a melted iron circulating like centrifuge, forming a magnetic field up to the moon. If this magnetic field change, you will make a massacre. For that, you might find many, many living systems were perished due to the fluctuation or upside down the magnetic field. Now in Iraq, we feel that the magnetic field were changed a lot because of the heavy bombs were, you know, thrown on us. And because of the disappearance of our bears, which used to come to spend their winter in Iraq. And now if you go to hospitals in Iraq, you find that the cerebral meningitis, you find the leukocytes deficiency. People are dizzy, people are mad, losing stability. There are many, many diseases appear, psychiatric diseases. People are now having changed their way of life, their mood, due to the change in the magnetic field. This is one. The other thing that, you know, for pollution, now the light, you know, comes to the earth, I mean, to the area of Iraq, is a million and million times more than the usual. I mean, every day the sun sending photons to the ground, to the earth. They call it the radiation of the earth from the sun, which giving the life. And the, you know, I mean, exploding bombs and burning fires, etc., increasing the number of photons of light. And this going to affect, I mean, to live, for instance, if you live in dark, is your life is quite different if you live in sun. For that, if you are supplying light all the time, it is really not good for the environment. For the Iraqi environment received a very high amount of photons of light, which affect the people in their environment. I don't know whether I explained myself. I mean, this sort of pollution, and there is also what you call it electrical pollution, and there is magnetic pollution, electrical pollution. Now everyone is generating a generator in his house, and this is going to make a very bad pollution, noise pollution. There is electrical pollution, and I have a table to show you that. You should not sit very near to electrical equipment because they are going to give you electrical field or magnetic field. And I have a very big table telling you how much pollution you get when you sit in front of this broadcasting station.
In our studio, yes. Yeah. I sit here all day.
All the day you are receiving a lot of pollution as a microwave and radio, you know, waves, as well as the sounds which comes out of this. And this is also pollutant. You might not feel it, but they are really, and there are big studies about that. This is, I mean, what I'm going really to talk tonight, this afternoon about.
Yeah, yeah. What are you going to talk, can you give us some sense of what you will talk about on Friday? The topic, modern science and religion.
Well, you see, I mean, I believe religion is from God for the Christian, for the Jews, and for the Muslims. It is one religion, and God addressing people up to their standard. in the beginning, God addressed people up to their standard. Now we are in the 21st century. There are scientific verses, which is very clear in the front of us, that to know something about our God. I mean, for instance, just I'll give an example. I mean, Einstein said that E equal mc square, energy could be converted into material. And I found that in the Holy Quran, that this is in the Mary chapter. Mary, the mother of Jesus, is God said that we have sent her Archjibril as a light or as a spirit or as, you know, energy. When Archjibril came to the ground in front of Mary, he converted to a man, to a material. I mean, like that. I can't explain the verses in the Bible, the verses in the Old Testament, the verses in Quran. I have to. I found 1,500 verses in the Holy Scripture, which we could now relate it to science. For that, it means God. He sent this Scripture to us. It is from Him that man, human, you know, kind has to be good and following the way of God. I'm going to talk about that, and I'm going to show pictures, scientific pictures, which is up to date, which is go parallel with the Holy Scriptures, not opposing, because people nowadays think that religion is against science. I found that is not true. I mean, always religion going parallel with science, because God, He has sent these scriptures to us, and He should be telling truth, and God would never tell lies.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Anis Al-Rawi, Dean of the College of Science for Women at the University of Baghdad, Iraq. We have just a couple of minutes left, and one of the questions I probably should have asked you early in the interview when we were talking about the University of Baghdad, you know, given that you're the Dean of College of Science for Women, is the University of Baghdad, is it segregated by gender? Is there a school of science for men and for engineering and, you know, whatever the discipline?
Actually, we have got all the colleges where genders mixed, mm-hmm. I mean male and female. Only our college is segregated. It is in the same campus, but segregated with fence. It is only for females. You might ask me why it is for females. Because in our tradition, people are so fanatic. They don't send their daughters to mix with boys. For that, we found that many girls are, sitting at houses. They don't go. They lose their teaching. They lose their learning. We then say that, why don't we open them a university, you know, on their own? You know, just like they like not to mix. For that, we open a university, a college for them to study the same level of study as the other colleges, but they are on their own as females. For that, this is the cause, because some parents won't allow their daughters to go to university to mix with boys.
But other colleges at the university, say the College of Education or Engineering, would the issue be the same?
There are some parents, they don't care sending their daughters to be mixed with boys. I mean, they don't care with men. But there are some who they don't want to send their daughters. For that, why do we deprive them from having science? Open them in a college or university and let them learn. And then after 4 years, when those girls graduate, you know, they will mix freely with others. I mean, they said, okay, they will learn that there's no harm in mixing. Life now is quite different from before. I mean, 40, 50 years ago, you might not find a woman walking in the street at all, because it's not allowed a woman to go by her own. Someone of her first relative has to go with her. But now you can find a woman go to Europe, to America on her own, studying 5-6 years, and no restriction. It depends on the society, really, and the way of the people living.
Hmm. There we have to leave it. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon and talking with our listeners.
Thank you very much for inviting me to talk with people in America, and I wish all the best for all of you. I wish development and prosperity. Thank you very much.
Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Anees Al-Rawi, will be speaking later today at 4 p.m. at the University of Illinois YMCA on South Wright Street in Champaign about the consequences of war in Iraq. And Friday, he will speak at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center on South Lincoln Avenue in Urbana about modern science and religion. That talk set for 7:45 Friday evening. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. It's 1:52, and let's find out now what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon, futures at the Chicago Board of Trade in the soft red winter wheat pit finished the day like this. The May contract down a half cent today, 310.5. The settlement price with a high of 313.5. And the low there at 309, once again, the settlement for the May soft red winter wheat at $3.10.5 a bushel, and they were off a half for the day. May futures, or rather July contract now, 322 the high, the low at 318.25, settlement price at 320.5, they were down 3/4, and the September wheat for the day, 329.5 the high, the low at 325.75, settlement price $3.27 a bushel, down a penny and a half. December futures, 339 the high, the low, rather 339.75 the high, the low at 336. Settlement at $3.37 even. They were down 0.75 for the December, and the March settled off a half at 344.5. We do not have the high and the low price for that particular contract. From the corn pit, the May futures, 206.25 the high, the low at 203.75, settled 205.75, down 1. July, 214.5 high, low at 211.75, and July corn settled the day at 214.25 on this Wednesday afternoon. They were down a penny as well. September's off 1 cent, 221.5 the high, the low at 219, settled $2.21. They were down 1. And December futures, 230.5 the high, the low at 228.25, settled 230.25, down 3/4. March futures down 3/4 as well, 237.25 the high, the low at 35.25, and a settlement price up on that high at $2.37 for the March 2006 corn contract. Once again, it was off 3/4, just like that December contract was. May futures now down a penny and a quarter, 242 the high, the low at 40, settled at $2.41, down 1.25. May oats for the day, 159 the high, the low at 156.5, settlement price at 158, they were down 1. And July oats, 156 the high, low at 154.5, settled 156 even, they were down 3/4 for the day. From the soy complex now, nearby May beans, $6.25 the high, low at $6.11, settled 6.23 1/4. The May contract up 5.75, taking away a little more than the losses from yesterday. Once again, settling 5.75 higher in the May beans at 6.23 1/4. July futures, a 6.30 settlement price, up 5.5 cents today. The high for the July soybeans, 6.31, the low at 6.16 1/2. The settlement, 6.30, up 5.5. August soybeans, 6.29, the high, the low at 6.15 1/2, settled $6.28. They were up 5.5 cents. And the September futures for the day, 6.17, the high, the low at 6.07, settled 6.15. They were up a penny and 3/4. November, your new crop soybeans now, 6.10 1/2, the high, the low at 6.01. The beans that have yet to be put in the ground in the U.S. were $6.10 on the November futures at a penny and 3/4 higher today. January futures, 6.12 the high, the low at 6.04, settled $6.12. They were up 2 for the day. From the rest of the meal, or rest of the complex, the products look like this. Bean meal, May futures, 189.50 the high, the low at 185.70. And the soybean meal settled that May contract, 189.30. They were up two even. And the July bean meal, 190.50 the high, the low at 186.50, settled $190.10. They were up $2.20 for the day. May bean oil, 22.65 the high, the low at 22.31, settled 22.55. They were down one for the day. And July bean oil, 22.85 the high, the low at 22.47. Settlement price at $22.82. And they were up 8 cents for the day. Coming up during the closing market report this afternoon, as we do every Wednesday afternoon, we'll talk with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Get his view of the commodity markets from near Paris. And not France, but Paris, Illinois, there near Oakland, Illinois. That's where Paul's from. A little later in the program, we'll hear from Lafayette, Indiana. Chris Hurt will be along to talk a little bit about the futures market for hogs. And don't forget tomorrow, during the closing market report, we'll extend things out just a bit, and we'll take the whole hour from 2 to 3, and we'll talk a little bit about the WTO, the World Trade Organization, with Bob Thompson, ag economist and agricultural policy here specialist here at the University of Illinois. That thanks to Celeste Quinn, who is standing by the way, with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange. Celeste.
And it was a lower day today for livestock contracts. April feeder cattle, 109.10 the high, 108.60 the low, finishing today at 108.95, down 22.5. May, 106.35 the high, 105.70 the low, 105.80 the settlement, that down 35. August, 108 even the high, 107.30 the low, 107.62.5 the settlement, that down 42.5. April live cattle, 89.47.5 the high, 88.62.5 the low, the settlement 89.02.5 unchanged. June, 84.90 the high, 84.10 the low, the settlement 84.27.5, that down 40. April lean hog, 69.95 the high, 69.70 the low, 69.82.5 the settlement, that finished up 12.5. May, 75.85 the high, 74.90 the low, the settlement 75.62.5 down 45. June, 78 even the high, 77 even the low, the settlement 77.32.5 that down 32.5. July lean hog, 78.60 the high, 77.65 the low, the settlement 77.90 that down 52.5. And May bellies, the high 91.45 today, the low 88.25, the settlement 88.25, that down the limit, down $3. The Dow is off 92 points at 10,416. The NASDAQ off 28 at 1978. The S&P 500 off 13 points at 1175.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for his crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Brendan Schulte from Edinburgh, Pennsylvania writes, "Dear Dr. Science, how exactly do magnets work?
If atoms were people, then magnets would be illegal sweatshops, where those people work day and night in subhuman conditions, lined up.